17. Surely you're not taking Sprout's story seriously.
Is he known to be an extravagant liar?
Not till now. But a man with ape arms but straight legs?
Remember that I have access to ancient databases. There was a trading clan called Kispe, and the individual ship called Ark disappeared during the time of the First or Second Formic War. The family that commanded that ship was named Wapaya. They included speakers of Quechua and Aymara.
But anyone who knows anything about linguistics knows that Quechua and Aymara aren't even from the same language family. They all shared the Andean habitat, and their phonemes and morphemes influenced each other, but the languages were not mutually intelligible.
Thank you for providing me with a little lesson in linguistics.
Sprout got that wrong.
Sprout has not accessed the databases that include Kispe, Wapaya, Ark, the fact that they were Andean natives, and when the ship disappeared. So he got all those correct by chance?
The whole story, the birds, the tree man?
Yachachi, engineer.
Cannot be taken seriously.
So all this time when we've taken you very seriously, including my teaching you how to transport yourself and others outside and in, that was appropriate. But taking Sprout seriously, that is simply impossible.
The situations are not at all alike.
Let's both ponder that statement for a while, not forgetting the points that Sprout got right, before we talk again. Transcript. Thulium Delphiki and Jane Hibera, as cited in Demosthenes, The Delphiki Orphans.
Sprout sat in Cube, reading an old book from pre-war days. It had been intended as a cutting-edge explanation of deep physics and deep astronomy, and now it was almost laughable. Yet somehow the humans of that era managed to get into space, and when the Formics came, they were able to start from that shaky scientific platform and reach near-light-speed starflight and create the Ansible in only a few years, months, really. So it doesn't take accurate or complete information, thought Sprout, to be able to make giant leaps in technology that move right past the theory or contradict it completely. It just takes an open, inventive mind. He wanted to say this to Rukyak, but Sprout didn't know if he'd ever see Rukyak again. Of course, if he really did have the power or the skill or whatever it was to make the outside-in leap, then nobody could stop him from going back. Rukyak and his people didn't need a human child to look after. Sprout could not possibly keep up with them in the trees, and the people who lived underground had not invited him because he had never met any of them. So he would not go back on his own. He would have to wait for the Hiberas and the Delphikis to believe him. I have never done anything to earn their distrust. They know from Peters and Wang Mu's vids that the Kias really do steal everything. Why should they doubt that they did the same to me? But Sprout knew that there was nothing rational about his story. They really encased his head in so much poop that hardened into cement? Peeing on it made it soluble again? He held his breath 3 minutes in the water? Well, they all knew he could do that. And then the whole thing about Rukyak. His body, and then his story. Everyone except Thulium had listened in silence, and when he concluded, Jane merely thanked him, and that was all. Thulium should have realized that Rukyak's history completely vindicated her idea that the Descalada did not originate on Nest, but she seemed most skeptical, and he was still in quarantine. There was no reason now for quarantine to take so long. If somebody was going to catch a dire disease, it would have shown up already. A brief blood scan should do the job, along with a visual inspection of the epidermis, mouth, nostrils, and ears to make sure there were no unfelt injuries or attached parasites. Who imposed the quarantine rules? Who had the authority to change them? Was there any kind of government in this project? Was it Jane? Or Ayla? Miro? It couldn't be Peter, even if he really was the same Iua as Ender Wiggin. Or was it the Hive Queen? Or the consensus of the Father Trees? Sprout had done nothing wrong. He was on the surface of Nest because Thulium insisted on taking him there. He stayed because he thought she was giving up too easily, and the events proved him right. He didn't deserve to be dropped from the project for his initiative. Nobody has dropped me from anything, Sprout told himself. Nobody has told me anything, so why assume the worst? Surely they're not listening to anything Thulium says. In retrospect, her snide comments during his account sounded like resentment. He had succeeded where she failed. He had stayed when she gave up. That would be intolerable to Thulium, of course. Sprout would smooth it over with her, once he got out of here. The lights in the lab came on. It was the middle of the night on Lusitania. Who would be arriving? Sprout set down his library book on the table beside his chair and stood up. Jane was at the door. She was unlocking it, but she wasn't alone. Miro was to be expected, but also Peter and Wang Mu, Thulium, and, from the box, Ayla and Quara, plus 3 Formic workers and 3 Pecaninos. It was like a diplomatic conference, or a panel of judges. Come on out, Sprout, said Jane. We're changing the rules. Quarantine shouldn't take more than 15 minutes in the future. Sprout said nothing, nor did he move toward the door. Come on out of there, Sprout. He knew this second voice because it was so strange and memorable. His eyes quickly found the raven on Wang Mu's shoulder. Are you Dog? Asked Sprout.
Arf, said Dog. Woof.
Did you meet the Hive Queen? Asked Sprout.
I hear you met a Yachachi, said Dog.
Thulium gave a little bark of a laugh.
I'm the Dog, Thulium, said Dog. No barking, please.
Thulium thinks that Sprout has exaggerated his experiences after she left him on Nest, said Jane. She's a skeptic. Or a heckler, said Peter. Dog hopped onto Jane's shoulder.
Why should there be any doubt? She asked. Look at the vids.
The Kias took Sprout's recording devices within 30 seconds of arriving on Nest, said Wang Mu.
Of course, said Dog. But I asked Royal Sun to make sure all recording devices were immediately delivered to the Achashiruna, and they should see to it that everything was recorded.
Where is the gear that Sprout brought back with him? Asked Peter. One of the Pecaninos handed him several plastic bags. He reached into one and removed the cam. In a few moments, it was plugged into a computer, while Wang Mu set it up to display on the largest holopad in the room. There stood Sprout, with bright-colored Kias bombarding him with bird feces. At first, he was embarrassed, but Sprout quickly became fascinated with the way the birds performed accurate bombing runs without ever making it look like they were organized in any way. They came from everywhere at seemingly random intervals of a second or less. And there was Sprout, sinking to his knees, then wiping the sludge away from his mouth so he could speak.
Did I see some of that go into your mouth, Sprout? Asked Ayla.
You don't want them to add it to the menu here, said Sprout softly. A few people chuckled.
You can skip past this, it's not interesting, said Sprout, trying to avoid the whole business of discovering he couldn't scrub his face clean and then stripping off his clothes and playing dead and all that stuff.
It's extremely interesting, said Ayla.
Was she in charge of this gathering? Was Ayla head of the project after all, even though she was far from the smartest person working on it?
Well, he only assumed that because she wasn't a leguminid. She had come up with the altered Descolada that saved Lusitania and, along with it, the whole human species. So Sprout rocked his head back and watched every moment of the vidrec through his nearly closed eyes, the way he watched scary scenes in movies when he was younger. Whoever was holding the camera did a good job of pointing it at everything that mattered, including the Kias laying out his clothes on the grass before he returned to them. They made a game of it, of course, and the whole process looked disorganized, including the birds that got inside his underwear and pushed it into his trousers, while other Kias held his waistband open. Chaos, chaos, and then the Kias all flew off, and the clothes were laid out perfectly, as if Sprout had only just been spirited away, leaving the clothes behind. "Gotta admire those Kias," said Miro.
"Pesky little jerks," said Dog.
"Like I said," Miro affirmed. Sprout watched himself get dressed, clumsily because the clothing kept sticking to his wet skin. Then the vidrec got confusing, because the person holding it was apparently still filming while brachiating through the trees. A couple of times, an out-of-focus shape appeared at the very top of the holodisplay, and it was Wang Mu, who said, "The Achachi must be operating the cam with his foot while he swings using his arms."
"It's giving me a headache," said Thulium.
"You don't have to watch," said Jane, utterly without sympathy in her voice. Oh, thought Sprout, Jane is angry with Thulium. Well, that's better. It meant that not everybody shared Thulium's point of view. And then there were slight gasps, murmurs, even chuckles when Rukyak came down and Royal Sun made the introductions. Wang Mu paused the playback while most of the people in the room walked around the holodisplay to see from every angle. Of course, the vid was taken in only two dimensions, but the playback extrapolated from all the footage and from every view to create a reasonably accurate replica of angles that the cam hadn't actually picked up at the time. Wang Mu resumed the playback, and they listened to Sprout's account of the leguminids in Anton's key, and then Rukyak's story of the folk and the Achachi Runa. The playback ended just before the time when Kias brought back most of Sprout's gear, including the cam that made this vidrec.
"Thank you," said Sprout to Dog.
Dog bobbed her head. A nod? Probably.
"If I had known this vidrec existed," said Ayla, "I would not have called such a meeting. It wouldn't have been necessary if we had simply believed Brussels Delphiki in the first place," said Jane. "He's known to be a truth-teller, and I had independent corroboration of the existence of the trading family and the mining ship that Rukyak told him about."
"Better to have the whole thing," said Ayla. "It's hard to imagine what too much evidence would look like."
Thulium spoke up.
"You look at it every day. It's the whole universe in every detail through every moment of time."
She was greeted with dead silence. Sprout couldn't have that.
"Hey," he said, "that was funny."
"Not very," said Peter.
"That was Thulium saying that she's sorry she doubted me," said Sprout. "And now this is me saying that if I hadn't lived through it, I don't think I would have believed it either."
Sprout felt a hand on his shoulder. It was Quara, the Hibera's difficult child. Well, Sprout knew that Thulium wasn't the Delphiki's difficult child. That would be the twins, individually and in the aggregate. But he still felt moved that Quara, who had often behaved like Thulium in the past, was the one who acknowledged his forgiveness of Thulium.
"Please settle something for me, Jane," said Thulium.
"There's something left to settle?" Jane asked.
"When I left Nest, I thought I was bringing Sprout back with me, but he wasn't with me when I arrived. Did I take him outside, but he returned inside to a place of his own choosing? Or did I never take him anywhere?
and he just remained there on Nest.
And this makes a difference to you because if Sprout brought himself back inside to a place of his choosing, said Thulium, then he's as capable of this leaping thing we do as I am.
Not as practiced, perhaps, said Jane, but as capable, yes.
Can anyone learn it? Asked Thulium.
We know that it comes easily to Leguminids, said Jane, and also to Peter Wiggin and Si Weng Mu, not to mention Miro. But the Hive Queen assures me that most Ayuas lack the capacity to carry anyone besides themselves completely. Things would fall apart outside, and not all could be brought back in.
Unpleasant, said Dog. I take it my Ayua, the thing we call Inwit, I believe, is not one of those capable.
I don't understand your brains, said Jane. You have capacity far beyond brain size.
Our brains are organized on different principles than your mammalian brains. Dinosaurs also had very small brains to control gigantic bodies. Whatever tricks their brains played to bring it off, our brains also did. But it isn't a matter of brain size, is it, Jane?
Dog, said Sprout, what Jane is reluctant to tell you is that she doesn't know if she's ready to train any of the birds of Nest. Imagine if vast hordes of Kias suddenly appeared on any populated world and played a game of chaos with the people there.
Sounds fun, said Peter.
Disastrous, said Dog. But ravens are not Kias.
Sharing this with other humans is perilous enough, said Jane. If you can learn to do it, Dog, then the power would be forever out of my control. You would share it where you wanted, and I would have unleashed chaos on the universe.
How do you control these humans, these children you've already shared it with?
I can watch over them, because they're only a few, and whatever they do with it, I can undo instantly. But it's beyond my bandwidth to be able to control 1,000 ravens.
I don't want the power, said Dog. I just wondered if you would teach me, if I had a good reason to desire it.
Dog, said Jane, I will refuse you nothing. You don't need a reason. But give me time to sort things out. Wait until we meet with the people underground on Nest. The folk, Rukyak called them.
The Runa, said Dog.
It's the Quechua name for themselves. The folk is a decent translation. Their language is called Runasimi, folk talking.
The Runa, said Jane. When can we meet them?
When I go back home, said Dog, I will invite Rukyak and Royal Sun and Phoenix to go with me to talk with the Huapaya, the leader of the Runa.
Thank you, said Jane.
We will tell them all that we have learned, said Dog. Then the Huapaya will call a council, and they will decide what to do about you.
Sprout finally spoke up again. Dog, you watched the vidrec. Since I didn't know it was being recorded, I did what I would do if no one was watching except the Kias. Please tell me, did I do well or did I make mistakes? If I made mistakes, I want to learn from them so I don't make them again.
Dog flew to Sprout and landed on the table he was seated at.
Sprout, the humans I have met so far could not have chosen an emissary who did better than you. You made no mistakes because you tried no strategies. You simply responded to ridiculous provocations according to your own inwit, and that is always the right course.
Sprout felt tears dribbling down his cheeks. Foolish child, he told himself. Yet he knew they were tears of relief,
because his deepest self-doubt had been answered, had been taken away. He could trust himself, which meant he didn't have to rely on Thulium to tell him his worth.
"When can we go back?" asked Sprout.
"I will send Dog back at once if she wants to go," said Jane. "Or she can stay as long as she wants and see whatever she wants to see and speak with anyone who won't die of heart failure to have a raven talk to them."
"May I take a copy of that vidrec back with me?" asked Dog. "I believe it will be as convincing to the folk as it was to you."
"Can your computers read it?" asked a Pecanino.
"Our computers and yours work on the same principles," said Dog, "because everybody had computers before the Huapaya left the Sol system. I assume the wreck is both two- and three-dimensional."
"It can be read either way," said the Pecanino.
"Good.
I will go with you to help them understand the format of the drive," said the Pecanino.
"The Yachachi Runa will figure it out and make it work," said Dog. "But your offer was thoughtful and brave. Since humans always need names, I assume you, who work with humans, have one?"
"I am called Fingers," said the Pecanino.
"Don't all your kind have fingers?"
"Fingers is a translation of digits," said Fingers. "Because I work with digital machines and I know how they work, my people call me Fingers, and so do the humans here, the few who ever ask a Pecanino for a name."
"Can't they tell you apart?" asked Dog. "They can't tell ravens or kias apart until one of them speaks."
"They know me well enough," said Fingers, "because when there's a computer problem to solve, they don't ask any of the other Pecaninos to help. Just me."
Quora laughed.
"Well, it's nice to know how careless and stupid we look to the people we pretend to respect."
"Respect is always a pretense," said Si Wang Mu. "It begins as a game of pretending, and then, as the players come to know each other, it can turn into real respect, or it can remain pretense forever, because nobody is worthy of it."
"How very quotable," said Quora.
"I know," said Wang Mu, "because I was quoting. Han Feitze, who was my teacher for a few months, said and wrote many wise things. I will give you the titles of his books."
"I look forward to it," said Quora.
To Sprout, it sounded as if Quora was being sarcastic. But if Wang Mu didn't realize that, or saw the sarcasm but chose to take it at face value, it was none of Sprout's business. He wanted to read the books, but he'd talk to Wang Mu about it later.
"I assume," said Ayla, "that everyone here agrees that we should accept Sprout's report as originally given, with augmentations from the vidrec. Anyone to the contrary?"
Nobody spoke. Nobody moved.
"Then the report is accepted, and we will all study it to form the basis for further action," said Ayla.
Peter chuckled. Sprout saw that Wang Mu made a subtle gesture to him. He assumed it meant shut up, but in the nicest possible terms.
"You are amused?" asked Ayla.
"Nobody ever accepted Wang Mu's and my reports," said Peter.
"Nobody ever doubted them," said Ayla. "And you brought back Royal Sun and Dog."
"Can I get dressed in regular clothes now?" asked Sprout.
"First, get your hair cut," said Ayla. "Not all the bird crap came out of your hair, and cutting it shorter will probably be easier than finding a useful chemical solvent."